The dog is not my dog, but it is a dog. The first dog anyone has seen since yesterday. I can also see that this dog is not alone. It's on a leash, held by Duke, my boss.
Can you believe it? He's a spitting image of Polka. They could be twins.
He's right, Poker, Duke's former dog, the brown boxer. This dog looks exactly like Poker. Duke swore he'd never get another dog because losing Poker hurt too much. But here he is, holding onto the leash of this brown boxer while it sniffs at my ankles. I ask where he got him.
Laying on my front lawn. No leash, no nothing. Ain't that a kick? I would have called around to see if anybody was missing a dog, but the entire town is missing a dog. I'll head on down to the big board tomorrow morning, see if he has an owner. For now, I thought, why not go for a walk?
Duke is not one to get emotional. He served time in the military. One of those old school guys who shoves anything resembling emotion down the depths of his stomach, hoping it'll never come bubbling up to the surface. But I could tell that he was doing his damnedest to not shed a tear in front of one of his coworkers. I haven't seen Duke smile like this in, well, ever.
I must have walked 5 miles by now. This guy's got a motor that just won't quit. Well, the wife is probably worried by now. We've been out and about for 3 hours. I just don't feel like stopping.
I don't know what to say, so I say nothing. I just stick my hand out so his dog can sniff before he has enough of my scent, turning back to go walk over towards his temporary master. Temporary is not confirmed. You should see the twinkle in Duke's vision, piercing right through the dark, brighter than Dax's flashlight that is now aimed at his boss.
Duke!
The flashlight lowers to the dog. Duke is ecstatic to repeat himself for a new pair of awed eyes.
Hey there, Dax. You boys looking for Luigi?
I'm in shock. Luckily, Dax's mouth is able to move at the moment and form words.
That was the plan, boss man, but it appears you have a dog, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's, I'm not sure what it is. Interesting is one word, that's for sure.
Duke seems nervous. Tensions fill in the oddly chilling air.
I would have come look with you boys, but then this guy dropped out of the sky and I got a bit distracted. Sorry about that. I'll drop him off and then come help y'all.
Duke begins to walk away. Me and Dax follow him every step of the way.
What makes him special?
This is what Dax whispers to me as he leans in close enough for a whisper, while we hang 5 feet behind an increasingly anxious Duke. I shake my head for 2 reasons. One, I don't know what makes Duke special. Two, I don't want him to get even more anxious than he already is. Duke turns around, noticing that we're not walking next to him anymore.
You all right? Feels like you're tailing me, huh?
That's the thing, boss man. We are.
Duke begins to slow down, and his right hand moves slowly towards his waist.
Any particular reason?
Yeah, boss man, there's a very particular reason. I think you can guess what that is.
Dax is speaking for me. A thought I never thought I would have, but here we are. Speaking and thinking as one while Duke grows edgier by the second.
My dog?
Yeah, boss man. You seem to be in possession of something that's gone missing. I'm real keen to know why that is.
I'm just as keen as you are, Dax. More so, even.
Glad we're on the same page, boss man. I think it'd be best if we all went back to Cap's house so we can sort this out together. Come to something resembling a conclusion about your dog.
Duke was turning tight. He's pushing 60, but don't let the age or the gut fool you. Duke is tough. Not the kind of guy I'd want on my bad side. Until now, I never thought we'd be on opposing sides. But I can't help but see an invisible line between us that's slowly becoming visible. That thing on his waist that he's casually gripping is a Swiss Army knife that lives on his everlasting keychain.
How about this, boys? I drop the pup off, we get a decent night's rest, and then first thing tomorrow morning, we all put our heads together, see what clicks. How's that sound?
I'd rather sort this out right now, boss man. Tomorrow morning might bring a whole new slew of questions. Right now, you're holding on to the one thing resembling an answer. So, let's say you turn around and on back to the Cap's house. I'll make sandwiches and we can all make hay.
Duke was doing that thing. That thing where he takes a breath so big that you can feel him breathing. As if his gut was your gut. It's how he lets you know not to mess around.
How about you, Cap? You think we should all sleep on Duke being a key to salvation? Or you think you should come back to your place so we can kick the can with Boss Man? See what's what.
Yeah. How about you, Cap? You're being awful quiet. You think there's something evil about me finding a dog?
Dax takes a couple steps forward. These were not friendly steps. Duke had age, experience, strength. Dax had confidence. How it got there? I don't know. But Dax is the kind of guy who would start swinging and not stop until the bell started ringing. I have to speak before. Duke? I finally say. Followed by, did you really find that dog on your lawn? Duke rotates his neck. We can hear it crack.
You think I'm lying, boys? Is that what's happening here? I think you've been hanging out with John Stuckey too much and he's turning your brains to mush. Now, here's how this is going to play out. We're all going to go our separate ways. At 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, we'll meet right here. And I'll drive us wherever you want to go that you think might provide some clarity on this situation. Because the way you're looking at me now, it's not the way I like to be looked at. Especially by a couple of boys who I consider friends. You think real careful about how you respond before you do.
We do. Think. Me and Dax are no longer riding the same wavelength. His thoughts feel more violent. Mine are somewhere between blind and fear. My senses are starting to fail me.
All right, boss man. 6 a.m. right here.
Good. Y'all have a good night. I'll bring coffee.
Me and Dax watch him and his dog walk inside of his house. We turn to look at each other. I expect Dax to say something, to enlighten me with another theory. He stays quiet and begins walking back to my house. It does not escape me that tonight is the perfect weather for a walk. A scorcher of a summer makes you look forward to even the slightest of chills in the air. Tonight, the temperature is dialed down to the perfect amount. It's got to be at least 30 degrees cooler than it was this afternoon, when I was still somewhat sane, before the pale horse rode over my common sense and Duke found a dog. My brain switches gears to something truly terrifying. John Stuckey is alone in my house. My bathroom door is shut. Dax lightly taps my shoulder and says,
"Yeah, we had tacos on the way over here. Stuckey might be in there for a little while. Better get cozy. Might want to fire up some of those scented candles if you got any."
Dax walks over to my couch and sprawls over the corner seat, leaning his head back.
"I should have been quicker to draw, Cap. I knew there was something funky in Chinatown when I first saw the squirrels were missing. But I waited because I didn't want to cause a panic. Shoot, now look."
He's right. As far as I know, Dax really was the first one to notice. The guy who's ahead of the entire town is currently on my couch, scratching his nuts while yawning.
"Why, Duke? What do you know about the boss, man? There's got to be something, Cap."
"It's true. There has to be something about him. But what? Duke is many things, but special is not one of them. He is ordinary in every way, as far as I know. My upper wheels are spinning too. Not as fast as Dax's, but they're chugging along. Is there something special about Duke? Would Duke lie to us? Would Duke lie to me? I've never seen that side of him before, at least not directed towards me. Someone who works for the town, yeah. Someone who's being too loud at the bar, yeah. But not towards me. That dog showed up on his front lawn? I'm not saying any of this out loud because I'm a little worried Dax might do something stupid. If there was ever a time to not be stupid, it was right now, when common sense had gone AWOL.
What's the pattern? Squirrels, birds, dogs, there's a thread, Cap. There's always a thread.
My lack of a response is derailed by a nearby flush and the opening of my bathroom door. Stucky hands me my now wet hand towel and says,
"The thread? We have to start from the beginning."
Squirrels?
No. That was the first thing we noticed. But what went missing first? Fish.
The word somehow stretches and wraps around my face. Either my living room is a cave or John Stuckey is an oracle. Both possibilities terrify me.
It was a Tuesday. I came home from the video store and saw that my goldfish, Gene, and Roger were gone. How could this be, I wondered. Had Grandma found them belly up and plopped them into the toilet? No way. Gram is a twisted minx, but she would never dare to flush my gold without my approval. That occurred on July 28th, 2 weeks prior to Dax informing me about the squirrels. The truth, comrades, is that this extinction has not been a sprint. It has been a crawl. We are the frogs in the pot of boiling water, slowly being burned alive. Frogs are gone too, FYI.
Dax pulls out another can of tuna. We all stare at it before Dax announces,
"You better save this one."
I open my fridge to grab an apple and then head for the front door. Dax asks where I'm going. "Town hall," I tell him.
"Town hall? Cap, that's got to be 10 miles from here."
"Good," I say, putting on my hunting hat. I could use the exercise. "And for the love of God, John." Stucky turns to me so I can tell him, eye to eye. "Light a match." Fear does the body good. I don't know what mile I'm at so far, but I haven't stopped yet. Last month, I'd get winded walking to my truck. This is what fear does to your mind, body, and potentially soul. It pushes you beyond what you assume to be your limits. I'm gonna find my wife. I'm gonna find my dog. 8 words on repeat. At some point, I expect Dax and Stucky to run up alongside of me. That does not happen. At some point, I expect to see a house with lights on inside of it. That does not happen. At some point, I expect to see people walking down a street in my town. That does not happen. None of my expectations are coming to daylight. Speaking of that, I have no idea what time it is. My watch definitely didn't freeze at 2:37 a.m. If it did, there'd be daylight by now. That means my watch definitely did freeze at 2:37 a.m. This feels important. Everything feels important when nothing makes sense. Sunset is around 8:30 p.m. Stucky's Pale Horse Mega Manifesto presentation could have been 10 minutes, but it felt like at least an hour. What constitutes for a downtown in Granbury should be up and running soon. People need their morning coffee. Their morning paper. Their morning bacon, eggs, cheese. Their morning trash being picked up. For reasons my waking dream state of mind can't piece together yet, I feel better outside. This is not a new feeling. It's the same reason I'd give my wife when she asked why I wouldn't want some cushy security job as opposed to back-breaking manual labor. Because nature heals the potential soul. The odds of spotting something on this walk is a hell of a lot higher than spotting something while inside of my house. The something that can be spotted beats the hell out of me. No, it's not what I can see. It's what I can't see. What's missing? What was here before but is now gone? Suddenly, the entire world is a 3D painting. Only I don't have time to stop and look at every single thing and figure out what's wrong with it. Downtown isn't far. The deafening quiet makes the puzzle pieces slide away from each other. I hear a bell. I turn, and it's someone on a bike, dressed in all black, except for the face. The face is a white mask. They pull up across the street from me and use their glare as night vision. I stop too. I ask if we know each other. He puts one finger up to the lip of his mask and keeps it there for a couple seconds. Then he lifts his foot and rides away into the opposite direction. Perfect. As if the air didn't have enough fog floating in it. I can see Town Hall, but I keep a wide eye in the sky. I can't shake the sight of Fred being entranced by the big blue above. That takes the cake and eats it too. Of all the people I've met in this town, he's by far one of the most sensible. The kind of guy you'd hope to run into when all the crap hits all the fans. I remember when we'd cross paths while I was walking Luigi. He'd be out smoking a cigar. His only vice, he said. The vice that his wife had been hoping he'd quit it for decades. Fred would always offer me cigars, but I never took him up on it. I didn't feel bad then. I do now. The only voice I've got is my own, which is speaking in a foreign language. I check my watch again. Maybe time will start up. Maybe everything will go back to how it used to be. Maybe tomorrow won't be a new day. Maybe is all I have right now. Maybe it's the fear. Maybe it's the mystery of the unknown. When your life up until now has been nothing short of ordinary, the idea of mystery can grow wings and fly out of reach. Whatever the cause, the next thing I do is something I haven't done in a long time. I shiver. I am the only person walking around downtown. Eureka. On the corner. A light. I go right towards it. Lucy's Diner. It's open. One of our town staples. The morning rush day would, under normal circumstances, be a mad dash to get one of the 8 booths or maybe some counter space. Normally, you'd give your name and then wait 10 to 15 before you got a seat. Normally, it'd be 20 minutes until a waitress even knew you were inside. Normally, the dozens of conversations happen all at once would become one soothing line of static. Normally, I'd be salivating to get sunny-side eggs with ham and hash browns. Today, when I walk in, I'm the only one. 2 waitresses stand up to look at me as if I have 3 heads. There's the older waitress, Dottie, and the younger waitress, Scarlett.
Where is everyone?
I tell her I don't know. Dottie asks if I saw anyone inside. I tell her I didn't. That's not entirely true. There was that guy on the bike, in the mask. But now doesn't feel like the time to bring that up. Just me, I tell them. They both slink back into their seats. I sit down at the corner counter, stool exhausted. Dottie tells me that the only thing they have is coffee.
The cooks didn't show up.
I say nothing. I just shake my head. Scarlett is a senior in high school. There's something about kids when they're scared. Suddenly the weight jumps onto your shoulders. Dottie comes over and pours me a cup of coffee.
Milk? Sugar?
Sure, I tell her. Anything resembling normal is soothing to her and me.
All the radio stations are out, but the mayor is supposed to make an announcement.
I watch the milk turn my coffee from black to brown. It's hypnotic. Anything and everything feels like a potential puzzle piece. I pick up my cup and very lightly move it in a circle, letting the coffee wash up to the edge of my lid. There's a slight buzzing. I instinctively swat near my ear, but I don't spot a fly anywhere. The caffeine is like dynamite to my skull. It blasts itself from my lips all the way to my pot-boiled brain.
Oh my goodness. Do you think it's true?
Do I think what is true? There's a brief muffling of words on the radio. Scarlett quickly tries to tune it, as if the slight nudge towards the right or left will part the wavelength and create coherence. It does not.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, please.
I asked Dottie what she meant by that question. Do I think what is true?
You know.
Dottie points up to the ceiling. I contemplate whether to tell them about Duke's dog. Where does that rank on what I've seen over the past 48 hours? And what about Dax? Tell me that his car floated? The pale horse? I can't even remember anything they told me about the book. It all feels like water hitting the sand, disappearing in front of my eyes while my body dissolves. I've been at Lucy's Diner hundreds of times, and somehow this feels like my introduction. I'm seeing things I've never seen before. The rustic copper hands and the crooked clock above the window in the kitchen. The blue sun and the hand-drawn picture by Lucy's grandson. The tiny tattoo of a wave on Scarlett's wrist. The impending invasion of gray hairs above Dottie's ears. I tell them I'm going to go to town hall and wait for my wife. She told me that's where she's going to be. I tell them she'll figure this all out. They tell me to come back if I hear anything. I say that I will.
You promise?
I do, I tell her. While placing my empty coffee cup down at the counter, I leave behind a $20 bill. If I had more on me, I would have left more. As I begin to walk away, I can hear Scarlett turning the dial on her radio. Dottie eagerly awaits a human voice. Nothing but static. The bell on the entrance dings and I'm back outside. Still dark. I turn around to give a quick glance back into the diner. They don't notice me staring inside. They're too focused on the radio. I try to convince myself that by the time I get up close to it, my mind will realize that my eyes have deceived me. I cling to this as I approach it. I love for something to distract me. A person, a sound, a light. Something to tell me that there is more here than just me. But that brief second of salvation does not arrive. It's a quick walk from Lucy's to Town Hall. Too quick. I'm debating whether to go back there. Maybe it's better to stay with them for now. They're scared. I can help. Or at least I can try to help. I'm getting closer to it and the fear is starting to bury my hope. If there was hope at all. I'm right in front of it now. I can barely stand. My legs feel like jelly and my hands are starting to go numb. My eyes have not been deceived. There's good news and bad news. Unfortunately, they are the same thing. The big board is now empty.